This is an episode where literally anything could happen. MDMM and I are sitting here. It is Saturday night. It's 6:14 p.m. and we're pretty hardcore partiers. I don't know if you know that about us, but Saturday nights get pretty wild, and this is one of them. So we just decided that we would do a podcast. I've been wanting to interview MDM for a while. Part of me wants to interview him because he's got a really good story in many different ways. But I also just want to have a way for anybody who asks me who MDM is, for me to just be like, just go and fucking listen to this, because people still ask me that. And I'm like, it's just accept it. It's just a name, it's a term, it's a nickname, like, fucking, it's fine.
One of my friends even said the other day that they went and Googled MDM to try and figure out what it was. I'm like, you're not going to find that in Google.
So, actually, it kind of goes back even further than when we were dating. I'd been listening to Call Her Daddy, which I have to say is probably a little bit of inspiration behind some of the avenues that I went down with regards to the conversations that I was having on social media, like in public. She talks about her dating life a lot, and she talks about sex, and she's super open about it. And she was seeing a guy called Mr. Sexy Zoom Man or something. And Greg and I started dating. So Greg and I met on Tinder. We swiped each other. It was very cliche. I found him on Tinder and I said to my friend, oh my God, this is the perfect guy. I've literally never spoken those words before. And I think I was almost saying it a little bit tongue in cheek because I was like, this is just so cliche, but he was perfect. And then it turned out to be Greg. So we met on Tinder. We had Zoom dates because we were in full blown lockdown, like full tit. What was that? The steel circle, the circle of steel that they had.
I think they were referring to, like, yeah, the ring of steel.
The ring of steel in Melbourne, because you had a 5K radius you could not go beyond, and there was a curfew. So from 9 p.m. till 5 or 6 a.m. the next morning, you weren't allowed to leave your house unless it was an emergency. Oh, this is in 2020, in the depths of COVID. So we matched, and then we lived an hour apart from each other, so I don't know how we matched. And we started chatting. We had a couple of Zoom dates. We had a couple of phone calls. Greg immediately started falling in love with me. and then I decided that we should meet in person. And I was just going to go to his house because we couldn't go anywhere. There was nothing open. And last minute, I was like, oh no, what if he's a murderer? So I made him meet me out in a public place by the beach, and we just went for like a really quick walk along the beach, just so I could figure out maybe if he was going to be a psychopath. I think it was more like, just in case I didn't like you.
I was trying to figure out to make sure you weren't a psychopath.
Yeah, sure. You were quite offended when I was like, I just need to make sure you're not going to be a weirdo. So we went for our little walk, and then I went back to his place, and the rest is history, ladies and gentlemen. That was on the 4th of September, 2020. And here we are, almost the 4th of September, 2022, 1 month out. A little bit more than a month out. So that's how we met. And I never said who he was on Instagram, because I had a fair few followers. Like, I had, how many followers did I have when I met you? Would have had like 30,000 followers, maybe 40,000 followers, somewhere in the realms of 20 to 30K plus. So I started talking about a guy that I was dating online, I was talking about a guy that I was dating on Instagram, and I decided to not, quote unquote, reveal his identity because, one, I didn't really know where it was going and what was going to happen, and I didn't want to share something about someone that it was like, oh, I don't know what's going to come of this. And I also didn't want to start talking about someone and be potentially going to share personal details without having his full consent and without ensuring that, you know, I wasn't going to share stuff that was really personal that he would not be cool with, or just that would be kind of, I guess, disrespectful to just start sharing personal stuff about someone and have their identity out there in the world. So I initially said, I think I called you like the date boy or like the date guy or something. And then it morphed into Mr. Date Boy. And then I think I was like, oh, no, I'm going to say Mr. Date Man.
I think someone asked you a Q&A, didn't they? I thought that someone wrote you saying, like, how, because I think you posted the first night we went on a proper out date. Then you were in a purple dress. We went out to...
Purple dress.
Yeah, that night. So I think it was that night someone had asked you in a Q&A or a message saying, how was your date with Mr. Date Man? And I think that's when...
Yeah. So then Mr. Date Man just became MDM. And for a year, I didn't tell anyone who he was. So we just kept it under wraps because, again, I was still kind of figuring out how much I talked about us and how much I talked about things that were going on and what we were doing as we were starting to kind of move forward and make progress in our relationship. So I just felt uncomfortable sharing his personal details. And I think you'd always said, like, hey, it's cool, like, I'm all right. You, mind you, at the beginning, you might have been a little bit more cautious.
Yeah.
And then as things progress, you were like, oh, look, it's okay. But I just still wasn't sure. I know that you were being nice and you were like, hey, you can share it. That's fine. Share what you like. But I was still maybe a little concerned about your own personal private life and also your work and career. So I just kept it under wraps. And then at Torian 2021, I think that was when we revealed you. You were at Torian, so I was like, well, hey, it makes sense. So that was when we started the podcast. The first episode was MDM being revealed as Greg. That was the first time you guys heard his voice. Actually, no, you'd heard him on Instagram. But so yeah, that is the story of MDM, how the term MDM came about, what it stands for, and how we met. And yeah, things just, I think when we reflect on the lockdowns and dating during the lockdown, like a lot of couples that got together during the lockdowns, it kind of accelerated things. We just spent a lot of time together hanging out, like on the floor of Greg's apartment, and he'd come down to my place. I was living in a single, like a little one-room studio apartment. Not even one room. They're just called studio apartments because there's technically no rooms. It's just one big room. He'd occasionally come down and hang out there, but we'd mostly hang out at his place. And yeah, and then this is what came out of it. So what I remember talking to MDM about very early on was CrossFit, because in his Tinder profile, he had a lot of CrossFit photos. Turns out...
One.
No, I think you had... Oh, okay. So I'm saying multiple photos because you had multiple CrossFit shirts on in different photos. And then you had like a squatting photo, I'm pretty sure. Hmm. I'm pretty sure your dating profile has at least 4 weightlifting photos now.
It's because I'm lifting so many.
You have so many. And you complain when people are like, oh, you're just so obsessed with working out. I don't want to date you. So... I was super excited to match with him because I'm like, oh, he CrossFits. Oh, my God, it's the best. And immediately started talking to him about training. And turns out he hadn't done CrossFit for like 5 years. And his photos were like, he's currently on his app checking how many photos he has.
Two lifting photos, one triathlon one, and one of me staring up at a pull-up bar.
Oh, yeah, see, 4. I said 4 CrossFit photos. A triathlon counts. 4 working out photos.
Nah.
So, yeah, we were talking about that, and I realized that he had quite an interesting story about training and a whole history with CrossFit. So what we figured out is we started CrossFit at the same time. I started CrossFit at the end of 2011. And what year did you start?
Yeah, 2011 as well.
2011 as well. So I was like, oh, he's an OG, but he's taken like 5 years off. So what actually got you into CrossFit? How did you get to that point that you found CrossFit?
So at the time I was running a lot, like when I found CrossFit, if you want to go to that day. I was doing a lot of running. I'd just gotten into training and the loop that I used to run near my house every day, I kept running past this like house with a shed out the side and saw a bunch of people in there doing something, which I didn't really know what it was at the time, and then occasionally seeing them all stumble out of the shed and collapse onto the driveway. And I just kept running past it for probably months. And there was no signs or anything. Like, this was like early CrossFit when it was just a shed at a guy's house. And then one day there was a sign out the front. So he put up like a little cardboard sign with the CrossFit Origin printed on it.
Mm.
And probably ran past a bunch more times and eventually just got curious and looked it up online, and that's how I found CrossFit.
So you were doing a ton of running. What did training look like for you before CrossFit?
I was doing half marathons. So had done 5 or 6, I think. It was just running a lot, like probably 50, 60 Ks a week.
Was that also when you were really into like healthy eating, like super clean eating? Or was that after you got into CrossFit?
At that point, I think I was eating what I at that time thought was like, I was eating cereal, but I was eating the healthy cereal.
Yeah, okay.
So that stage of
nutrition. Yeah, that stage.
Like one of the ones with like full bran and sultanas, like that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, nice. You were pretty skinny.
I was.
Like when I see photos of you back then, you were very, 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 like just bones.
92 kilos, I think was the lightest I got to.
Mm. So Greg's like 6'5", very tall. It's a tall human being. When I see those photos, I'm like, oh my gosh, even your face is like very long and kind of drawn. Did you really like running? Or did you kind of hate it?
No, I loved it at the time. Like I just kept building up. Like it was one of those things that like when I first, like I wasn't training, I wasn't doing anything. I was really unfit, really unhealthy. And it just became the thing that I started doing. Like when I first started, there was, I think I've shown you since we moved to Newcastle, like at the back of where my old apartment was, there's this big staircase.
Yeah.
And at the time, like I just started like literally each day doing like walking up and down that. And then that became running up and down it or running up it and then like around the block and then back up the stairs. So it just kept building on it. Just slowly kind of building volume and distance over time, and it just kept getting more and more.
So did you just get competitive with yourself?
Do you want the easy answer or the complex one?
Always the complex.
All right, we're going to have to dig back into the archives.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, I guess it's time that we go back from that. What we wanted to do is...
We're kind of gradually working our way back. But
I wanted to know your, like, how did you find CrossFit story? Because everybody's got that fun little story. But there was a whole lot of stuff that happened before you got to CrossFit. There was a bunch of shit that was going on in your life. How old are you now?
36.
Almost 37. Okay, so talk to us about Greg 15 years ago.
15 years? You picked a strategic amount of years there.
Early 20s, Greg. What was going on in your life?
I was a rat bag. Yeah.
Were you working out?
Definitely not. Depends if you count 3-day benders as working out. My heart rate was elevated. Yeah, it might count.
I think it was permanently elevated at that point.
Yeah.
That was just your heart rate. It wasn't elevated.
Probably. So 15 years ago, really had, like drinking a lot of drugs. Probably at that point had a pretty bad coke habit. Hanging out with mostly bikies and people that were in jail or in and out of jail at the time.
Yeah, you've always said that it was kind of a miracle you never went to jail.
Yeah, I think at the peak of all that time, 4 or 5 of my best mates had been to jail, or were in jail.
Oh, man. Talk to me about your health back then, which clearly was maybe not a priority.
No, like, so I was a sporty kid. Like, I, like, growing up, played soccer a lot, and then I played basketball a lot. I got into the Newcastle rep team, like under 16s. Up until that point, probably for the sort of 10 to 15 years, I was playing basketball, 2 different comps, so 2 game days a week, 2 training days a week. And then I got into rep, and then that was an extra day, or sometimes 2. So like I played a lot of sport. I was never like a, I always had probably like, you know, like puppy fat. Like I was a solid kid still.
Well, you needed it because you were going to be so tall.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hit 6 foot at 14 or 15.
Yeah.
So I was a tall kid.
Jesus.
Yeah. So like then
that
I was healthy.
Makes me so afraid of our kids.
Yeah. And then so when I was 16, I had a thing called, so that growth spurt that happened, it's called Osgood-Slater's disease. Sounds terrible because of the name, but it's really just you grow too fast. Your bones grow quicker than what your tendons can keep up with. So it basically just causes like constant kind of micro tears of your tendons, walking, doing anything really. So that led to me stopping basketball at 16, which was kind of my life at that point. Mm. Yeah.
A little bit soul crushing, not being
massively.
Able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was super hard. Like not, you know, yeah, it was everything that I kind of loved doing.
Well, all your friends in basketball as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Cause your mum did basketball. Hey.
Yeah. Mum, yeah. My sister, like Laura was in a rep team as well. So it, like between both of us, like mum was coaching my team in one of the comps I was in, but like her whole life revolved around that. Like Laura, my sister was reffing, like being a referee as well as playing like same multiple different comps, rep as well. So that's like our life revolved around the basketball stadium. Yeah.
And how old were you when you stopped?
16.
Did you, I guess you couldn't do any other sports because of
actually,
the pain.
I was probably actually still 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it, like I pretty much had to stop. Like I remember like the day it was actually I think the first rep game for the season I'd got through like pre-season stuff for my first season of rep. My first game, we were basically warming up on the court beforehand and like I was fighting back tears. Because my knees were so sore. And then we were doing some just like sprints at the start and I had to pull out and stop and went to hospital. So, and got told at that point if I didn't quit, I'd be up for two knee reconstructions like pretty soon after.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think at that age, like if you're into a sport, like you're proper into that sport, like, you know, kids, everyone is so encouraged to just go after that thing that you do as your extracurricular activity.
Yeah.
And I think it does get quite competitive and you just get fully absorbed into it.
Yeah, we had a hoop in the backyard. Like, if I wasn't at the stadium, I'd be in the backyard shooting hoops and everything like revolved around it.
At that age to be like, hey, no, sorry, your body said no.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, yeah, it was tough. But yeah, like so I think at that point, like I'd say that's where my health really started to kind of decline a fair bit because I was still eating like I was moving that much. And like I've always loved to cook, like I cooked for my family growing up and everything. And, you know, I remember I've told you like jokingly like about like coming home from school and like cooking like cakes and slices and eating whole boxes of fish fingers and like multiple packets of 2 minute noodles after school. Mm. It's like I could
shortbread
do that
cookies.
When I was training that much. Yeah, shortbread, like, yeah, a bunch of stuff that I used to make. But when I was doing basketball 6 days a week, I could get away with that. But then, so, you know, yeah, basketball went away, but the eating habit didn't.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that's when things really started to kind of shift for me.
Did your mum ever talk to you about health or did you have any concept of what healthy eating was or anything?
No, not at all.
Mm.
No.
So you continued to eat, by the sounds of it, a lot of calories. And you're like 16, you're growing a lot. You've just been told that you can't play the sport that you're madly in love with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do anything else because you're walking around in pain.
Hmm.
Then what?
Is
that when you became a rat bag?
No, that wasn't like that was years later.
Mm.
The period directly after basketball was the high school stuff.
Yeah.
Do we?
Let's go there.
Yeah. All right.
We'll get to. I think your health is part of all of this, right? Like.
Yeah.
I guess this is mental health and.
Yeah.
Just getting into the realm of all that stuff.
So this the part like that I'm about to talk about, like we talked about originally, I think we're going to do like a two-part one. And originally we're going to save this for the second part, but now we're here.
where?
You said you wanted me to go deep.
We'll just tell your whole story from A to Z.
All right.
There's no way to avoid giving it all away.
Yeah. So that, like, that period, like, that would have been, like, year 9 at school. I would have been 15 still. And probably going on 16, I think, at the time. Yeah. So then really one day of... I won't talk about the, like, what led up to it. I'll start with at school one day, I was standing there. My best friend walked up to me, punched me in the face. Very confusingly, I went, what was that for? And he said, you know what you did, and he walked away. Turns out he thought that him and his girlfriend had had a fight the night before, where he thought, because of some events that happened over the weekend, that me and her had hooked up or slept together or something.
And you guys are like 15.
Yeah.
And so wasn't it just that you had been texting each other or something?
No, it was basically like there was a surf competition on in Newcastle on the weekend. At the time, like, all my friends, like, were a bit of a mix of, like, surfy kind of bodyboarders as well as skaters. And this surf comp in Newcastle is a really big comp. It's on every year. Like, pro surfers and stuff come to Newcastle. And I really wanted to go to that. And we got into Newcastle. There was sort of a split in the group where most of them, everyone wanted to go and skate for the day. And I was like, no, I want to go watch Surffest. And so I sort of said, hey, I'm going to go do this. And his girlfriend decided that she would come too. We went, hung out at the surf comp, and then got the bus home in the afternoon. That was it. yeah.
And so he's just immediately jealous when he finds out. Was he there at the time? Like, did he?
No, they went off and did their own thing, like, separate.
No, like, I mean, when she decided to go with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was there anything sus when he was like, okay, bye?
I don't remember. I don't really remember at the time. Like, I just... So, it happened the Saturday and the Sunday. So on the Saturday, it had happened, and I ended up going with them.
Mm.
So on this, like, we were meant to go in there on the Saturday, and then they went, oh, we want to go skating. I'm like, oh, like, and I was super disappointed that I wanted to go do that, but I went with the group. But then I was like, but tomorrow, like, we're going to Surffest.
Yeah.
And we came in on the Sunday, the same thing happened. And yeah. I kind of stood up and went, no, like, I'm going to go do this. And I was going by myself.
And what are the chances that your mates were giving him shit about his girlfriend hanging out with you?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's like nothing happened between you and the girlfriend. We never got to talking about that. Yeah, no, you guys never got that.
No. Yeah, so pretty much like that that day, that weekend started what was probably a year and a half of probably one of the toughest parts of my life.
Mm. So your best mate punches you in the face at school. What happened the next time you went to school?
I think later that day, I got thrown down a set of stairs. Actually, like, there was, like, stairs with a landing and then another stairs. I'll say probably my second best friend at the time, like, came and, like, charged me into the wall as I was walking down the stairs. That was that day. I don't think I went to school the days after that. I think I...
Oh, okay. So you were straight up, like... Nah.
I was super confused about what was going on. Like, it was like everything kind of just fell apart in the space of a day.
Mm.
And then I started to find out...
And I'm assuming that all those guys that you were friends with that were still in his cohort, do you want to name him or do we want to give him an alias?
James.
So I'm assuming that all of your and his mates were suddenly on his side and not talking to you?
Yeah. Yeah, so like it... And that was probably the initial really confusing thing was it went from like, I was already confused enough that he had hit me. Mm-hmm. And he didn't explain why. And then like, it was like we went into class and that, I think that was like recess or whenever the first, like whatever it was later in the day to then have that happen from one of the other guys. I'm like, oh fuck, like what's going on?
Mm.
And I think it wasn't until that night that I'd actually heard from his girlfriend at the time. She'd called me to tell me what had happened the night before.
Oh, so she was like, hey, this is...
Yeah. Yeah, I might have left school after that happened or something.
Mm.
And I think I either went home or something after the second kind of event happened.
Were they still together or did they break up? Like, what happened with that?
I think they stayed together for a little bit longer and then they broke up. Yeah, I don't remember. I think, yeah, I don't fully remember. They definitely ended up breaking up, but I just don't know how long after it was.
And so you skipped school for a couple of days and then what?
So, yeah, and some of this stuff, like, you know, obviously it's a little bit hazy on, like, exact days, details, but sort of for the, I'll say, whatever the initial start period was, like, I would go to school. Initially it was just, like, my group of friends that were kind of harassing me and being violent, like, same, I don't know when the time frame was, but I remember having my head smashed into a brick wall and like, split my head open a little bit. And it kind of kept getting, like, progressively worse. Yeah, like, over whatever it was, I'll guess.
Did anyone intervene? Like, were there, obviously it was happening at school and no one saw you with a fucking bleeding head and go, hey, Greg, what's going on? Or, like, in the intermittent times that you were actually at school, go, hey, why are you not showing up?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, like, it got to the point, like, this is, like, then, so, like, initially that all happened. I think I went to, Mum might have went to the principal or something, like, in that initial period.
Okay.
And I remember, because I just, like, I remember sitting in, like, the assistant principal's office at one point with James and them having, like, a talk to us. And then I think it got pretty, like, it got bad again.
I was going to say, does that make it go away or does that make it worse?
It made it worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
From there, it kind of extended from just the group of friends to everybody in my year and some people in the year above.
Fuck.
It would, like, it became, I've always kind of said it just became like a fun game for people.
I was going to say it became a sport for a high school fucking pubescent teens.
Yeah. Yeah, so it got pretty bad, like, violence from, like, other people that weren't even involved in my friendship, people I hadn't even met or knew before that point. Yeah.
So then the solution is to avoid school.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just stopped going to school. I was, at the time, like, and this is some of the stuff I think, you know, kind of hard about looking back at some of that, like, I was the top of, like, 3 computer classes, top of my science class, like, I was doing pretty good and, like, had my eye on what I wanted to do and what I wanted to go to uni for, and, yeah, at that point, I ended up not going to school for, I think it was 12 months. And I only went back to school to finish my, like, school certificate. But, like, during that year, like, it didn't just go away. Like, they came to the house, they would egg the house, they would prank call the house, like, at nighttime, constantly over a weekend. I went through, like, different stages where Mum would try and, like, make, like, you know, and doing the right thing as a parent, like, trying to make me go back to school. And, like, I remember throwing myself down the stairs at home, like, to hurt myself so I didn't have to go to school. You know, I tried making excuses and saying I was sick, saying, like, different things were wrong with me, but, yeah, I remember that at that point, that was, like, Mum was getting pretty worried about me not going to school, and so, yeah, I think on a few occasions I kind of hurt myself in different ways to kind of stop myself from going. Yeah.
Were you talking to anyone at the time? Like, did you have any other friends? Like,
No. I was super cut off. Like, for a lot of that period, it was pretty much sitting in my bedroom in the dark with Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit almost on repeat, playing aggressive sad music over and over in my room, suicidal for a lot of it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, at what point do you start self-harming or?
Yeah, really, I didn't actually get to the point of, like, apart from the, like, throwing myself down the stairs thing, like, self-harming as such. Like, I had.
It's almost like the throwing yourself down the stairs was, like, a tactic to avoid making, like, being in a position where things were worse with school.
Yeah, it was the lesser pain.
yeah. It was like a strategy to avoid being bullied further at school.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then I guess self-harm is a different thing, right? Like, that's a different beast.
Yeah, I think when people talk about self-harm, like, you know, they straight away go to, like, cutting and stuff like that happens. Like, I didn't ever do that. Like, I remember there was a lot where I was, like, I thought about killing myself like a lot, and I had this knife that like I still remember. It was like bone handle, gold ends, little like flip out knife. And I would have spent hours every day probably like sitting in bed with that in my hands. I remember getting to the point of like touching it on my skin and kind of, and then I would freak out and just break down and like, yeah, went through a lot of that sort of period. Couple of times, like, and I think it got to a point where like I decided I was going to. And that's really where, like, I think this is where it starts to flow into some of the kind of me and how I am with people and relationship stuff, like, because it was ultimately other people that saved me.
Yeah, well, I guess you're in an interesting scenario where, like, you know, you're super fucking young. It's not like you were an unhappy kid. It's that your whole world changed almost instantaneously. And it was very much external to you and the kind of person that you were. So it's not like the, you know, I guess self-harm, depression, the really fucked up place that you were in was coming from you. It was almost like you'd been cut off. Everything had happened in a way that was, that would have been horrific for anybody to go through. And it was kind of thrown in your lap. And you were just reacting to it all, I guess.
Yeah, I had awareness of that. Like, I remember having fights with Mum, and then, like, at one point she got the school counsellor to, like, come to her house.
Mm.
And she just came to my room. She's like, hey, she's like, you need to go downstairs. Mr. Porter's downstairs. And I went off. She's like, I went down there and both of them, and like, both of them at that point, but multiple times probably before and after that point, like, trying to get me on antidepressants.
Oh, interesting.
And I just refused, like, and like you saying that, like what I remember saying back then and what I remember screaming at the school counselor at the time when he came to the house was like, I'm not depressed. I'm in a shitty situation. Like, I had awareness that there wasn't something wrong with me. It was this external thing that was going on. Like, and that was the fight I used to always have with, like, yeah, both usually Mum about antidepressants, is that it was like, yeah, I knew that it was the situation, not me, that had a problem.
Bullying terrifies me. Like, I wasn't really bullied in school. I remember I wasn't in the cool group by any means. Like, I was definitely not a cool kid in school. And I remember having some girls who would talk shit about me, or having some friends who were assholes, or some girls who would, like, walk into me on the school grounds, but nothing severe at all. Mm. I think I was too quiet for anybody to ever really notice me. Mm. But I think about, like, having kids in a scenario where they're bullied, and I really haven't sat and meditated on it, but I don't know what you do. Like, how do you teach them to react and behave? How do you have them defend themselves without getting into more trouble? Like, what's the thing that you teach a kid without having them fucking be pushovers and put up with it and tolerate horrible people? But also, yeah, I feel like it would be such a, and it's not them. Like, it's not them doing anything. So not only are you having to deal with trying to help them in an environment where it's school and it's their peers, and having your parents get involved is way worse, but then simultaneously have them understand that it's not their fault. It's like, it's not you, it's not your fault, you're still a good person. How do I get you to believe that while we're talking about these people that are attacking you for who you are? Like, it would just be a mindfuck for a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old.
Yeah, and for parents to be, like, you know, as well, like, it was, but, like, bullying's not going anywhere. Like, we're not going to change that, like, and that's not a defeatist attitude. I think it's just in human nature that, you know, boys will test other boys. Boys will, you know, try and establish at that age, like, the pecking order as such. Like,
girls will be bitches.
Girls will do it as well, like, but I think that won't go away. So, like, you know, I have meditated on it because I've thought about that for a lot. Like, you know, what would I do differently, or what was the situation? And, like, I've friends of mine over the years that some of them have become parents, have then, like, that knew about some of this stuff about me, have sort of said, like, hey, like, my kid's getting, I remember one of my friends reaching out and going, hey, my kid's being bullied, like, what should I do?
Oh, interesting.
And I sort of said to her, I think she's got twin boys. And she's like, one of them's getting bullied. And I'm like, look, you can't fix the fact they're getting bullied. All you can do is make sure they know they've got support. Because that's what saved me. Like, that was the only thing. That was the thing that saved me, but also the thing I felt most challenged by was either the support I had, not feeling like I could talk about it, you know, feeling really stuck and really alone for a lot of it.
So you've been at home for however many months, avoiding school. Your mum's trying to intervene with best intentions, but it's going awfully wrong. And you're locked away pretty much. Like, when you say support, what is the kind of support? Because coming from your mom, like, she maybe wasn't giving the right kind of support.
Yeah, and look, she was doing her best to help with what she had, like.
Who of us have the tools, right, to deal with that kind of scenario?
Yeah.
But you had something quite amazing happen with people reaching out from school, right?
Yeah, so I think on kind of two occasions, like, probably at the peak of, like, the suicidal kind of side of things, like, at one point, like, I went down to my dad's, I'd written a letter, I'd, like, done all this stuff and decided, like, I was going to do it. And I went to this, like, there was this lookout down there, like, the edge of a rock. Like, I'd been there a few times and kind of sat there at the top of this huge cliff into, like, the gully, like, in the Blue Mountains near where my dad lives. And
it's really hard to hear this, by the way. It's, like, it makes my insides just...
It's kind of hard talking about it in a way. Like, I remember... because the thing that always used to stop me was, like, the thought of someone finding me and what that would do to them. I remember, like, going to that spot and being like, no one will find me there. Like, I'll be gone and no one needs to kind of, like, I'll disappear.
And is that what you wanted, like, in terms of making that plan? I guess it's like, it's hitting the abort button on life and escaping all of the shit because it felt like there was no other way, or because you felt like... I think what I hear from a lot of people is, like, suicide is because you feel like you're a burden and life's not going to get better, so why continue to live it? And people are better off without you. Did you think that people would be better off without you?
I think it was a blend of that, of, like, being a burden, but just feeling really, like, stuck in it. So, yeah, some of that where I felt like, yeah, maybe a burden, but I just felt kind of invisible, and, like, I remember thinking, like, no one would even notice, like, if I disappeared. But then on the flip side of that, like, I knew how much my family would. So it was that was the conflicting feeling, and ultimately what stopped me was knowing the impact that would have on my family and people that knew me, versus just disappearing off the face of the earth. Like, I felt like I was just existing and being hurt. And I just kind of felt like that would be the easiest option at that point.
Yeah. And then?
So the day I'd, like, written a letter at Dad's house and, like, gone out for a walk to this spot, I got a message from, so it was the girl that was James's girlfriend from school. We'd stayed in touch a little bit, but I don't think I'd heard from her in quite a while. But and she sent me a message that day saying, "Hey, like, I haven't heard from you in ages. Like, is everything okay?" Something to that effect. That I read it and went, oh, fuck, like, there's
someone,
people that know I exist.
About, like, you and who you are.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, that kind of just, that snapped me back into that place where I'm like, oh, shit, wait, no, there's people that do care. Yeah. So that was the first big, like, intervention, I suppose, that happened. I went back to Dad's, kind of decided to not at that point.
Do you think you were hoping something would stop you? Like, were you looking for something to stop you? Obviously at that point you were, like, quite prepared to follow through, but do you think that in your heart you really wanted to do it?
Probably not. And look, it might have been another one of those times that I got there and then I, you know, pussied out of it.
Yeah, right.
You know, I might have got there and decided not to do it, but it felt serious. Like it felt, like I said, I'd a few times gotten to that point, but then, you know, broke down and cried. Like, but yeah, that day, I suppose, like, it felt more serious, but I don't know what would have happened.
Mm.
You know? Yeah. So then I think, like, the next big thing, and, like, I think by that point, I'd kind of gotten through, like, the worst of the kind of, you know, that moment kind of shifted things a little bit. I don't remember feeling, like, as suicidal kind of post that, but I remember back then, like, the messenger, like, you know, the internet and the thing you would use to message was a message, instant messenger called ICQ. So, and I remember, I don't know how it happened, but a girl from my year at school, Holly, somehow we ended up connecting on ICQ. And I don't know whether it was like, I think you had to like add people by like a number or their name, but it might have also like, yeah, however it happened, I don't really remember, but she ended up adding me.
Mm.
And,
did you know who she was? Like, you were fully aware, or?
She was in my Japanese class, I think. Like, we had some classes together, but I don't think we'd ever talked before that. Like, she was, like, I'll say in the, like, nerdy girl group.
My kind of group.
Yeah, yeah. So, she was, like, she was a really quiet girl. Like, yeah, and I knew her from, I knew she was in my Japanese class, but I don't think we'd really talked much.
At this point, had some of the bullying and harassing and, like, prank calling and had some of that dialed down, like, dialed back a little bit, or...?
No, they, like, the... Because by that point, I wasn't going to school, so all of that had stopped.
Mm.
The prank calls and, you know, the egging the house and stuff was nearly... It was every weekend, you know? It was, like, they'd go out, they'd be running around the streets of, like, our suburbs and, yeah, they would come and... like do shit to our house, so because that was the days of like pay phones and stuff, so like
you and could just there to do it, right?
Yeah, like. Yeah, so all of that had kept up, I think, but yeah, like, so I was like online and started chatting to this Holly girl, like, you know, just messages backwards and forwards, and she was the same, like, she was like, hey, like, I've noticed that you're not at school anymore, like, what's going on? And I ended up telling her about like the stuff that had happened, and I think she kind of knew about it, but yeah, we just got chatting and like started to be online pen pals kind of thing. Mm.
Was this about how far, like, after you'd been punched in the face by your best mate?
Probably 12 months.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so
God.
I think it was at this point, like, that was, you know, that originally had happened sometime in year 9. I'm going to guess and say this was maybe like halfway through year 10.
Mm.
With like maybe another few months or 6 months before like the school certificate, like, which is like the first point that you can kind of leave school. Mm. You know, the first, like, I think some places call it kind of graduate certificate or something like that. So that's like for people that go to school that just want to do a trade or something, like, you have to have that before you can go out. So that was kind of approaching. Mum was kind of on my case about the fact that I hadn't been to school for 12 months. With the school certificate coming up and like that being a big thing that I had to get done. Mm. And I remember at the time, like, one of my aunties was like trying to get me to change schools, like, to go and do my school certificate and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah. Why did you not go to a different school?
I refused. I saw that was them winning.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I had two aunties that were trying to help out. One was managing a pub where a bunch of bikies were drinking. She was offering to go and break their legs and get this, like, big bikie man to, like, walk me into the school. And
clearly, she is the cool auntie.
Yeah, you, Auntie Kath, you know Auntie Kath? Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was her, my auntie on my dad's side. Yeah, she was, like, yeah, offering to pay to, like, send me to a private school or do something different. So, two different ends of the spectrum, but I said no to both of them. Now, in hindsight, probably should have gone with the broken legs one. But, yeah, look, I just, I saw that as them getting what they wanted.
Mm.
logic at the time was me staying home was probably also giving them what they wanted, but I saw that as me exiting.
Yeah, yeah, okay, and interesting.
Yeah, I didn't want them to win like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so got chatting to Holly. I lived only 3 blocks from our school. And I remember it got to a point where she's like, hey, like after school today, like, can I come up and see you? So she came up to my house and that was the first person I'd hung out with, in a really long time.
Sweet human.
Yeah.
So that was the first person to make contact with you and come out and see you. But I think she had friends.
Yeah, so she would pop up every now and again. My room, at mum's house, you could, if I took the screen out of my window, you could sit out on the roof of the lower part of the house. And I remember just for hours, we'd sit out there just chatting to her. And then, eventually got to the point that she was bringing the one friend and then two friends. And it ended up being the whole this group of probably 5 girls.
It's so interesting because I think of the kind of person that you are, and from the beginning, you've always been someone really good to talk to. And it makes me think about this whole story of you being 15, fucking staying in your room for a year, being bullied and harassed, and starting to make contact with people that were reaching out to find out what the fuck was going on and if you were okay, and that interaction being about you talking about really hard, big things. And shit that's going on in your life, and them being there to support you and whatever, however they could, and just be there, essentially, not that they could do much except for just be present, and how that's, I don't know, morphed into a big part of who you are and how you connect with people. You're very good at connecting with people and talking, and I think that it's almost a skill that you acquired from when you started talking to people again. It was the big topics because there was no other way that you couldn't avoid it.
Yeah, and to have people reach out like that, and they were asking me about what was going on, and like I said, I think then up until that point, it was the first time that I think anyone had been able to just sit with me and let me talk about how I was feeling. Mm. Going back to how mum was through it, it was really emotional for her. It was really hard to hear me going through what I was going through. So,
and emotional on another level.
Yeah.
Mum is... Your poor mum. It would have been awful.
Yeah.
It would have been awful.
Yeah, it's torture seeing your son go through that. But, I think that was, then... She struggled with... seeing me the way I was and talking to me about that, and she would then get upset. So fast forward to these girls kind of coming into my life, it was the first time that I could just talk about how I was feeling and what was going on, and to people that they couldn't go and take action. Mum, quite often if I'd talk to her, she would want to go to the school or go see their parents or do something about it, versus these girls were just the only thing they could do was sit down and talk.
And they also weren't obligated to care, right? She's just reached out to you for no other reason to be like, hey, what's up? What's going on? Tell me your story. It's not like she's family. It's not like she's related to you. It's not So they're just coming over to your house, and you just ended up in this fucking coolest group of nerd girls at the school.
Yeah.
And you're just the one dude. And they come and hang out, and... are you still, I'm assuming you're still having the prank calls and still having the boys are still being boys.
Yeah.
But you eventually go back to school.
Yeah. So I went back with the nerd girls. It was getting closer and closer to the school certificate, and I knew it was important. And mum had said to me, I can't leave school. It's one of those things where it's you can't drop out of school. You have to get that thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew that that had to happen. And that was getting closer and closer, it was months away kind of thing, I think, at that point. So eventually, Holly and this group of girls that I was hanging out with, eventually they were saying to me, just come to school. They were the nerdy group that sat up in the corner away from everyone kind of thing. Yeah, so eventually I went back to school and just sat with them, during like, you know, breaks and stuff like that. And I just went to class, kept my head down and, yeah, went back.
Had people kind of forgotten who you were?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think that maybe by then people were like growing up a little bit. I don't really know why, but I suppose people were maybe focusing on like studying for school certificate stuff. Yeah. Like that was a big thing that everyone was kind of focusing on. So I don't really remember that of like, you know, I think people knew who I was still, because I don't know.
But they just left you alone? Did you get bullied?
Yeah, lightly. Like, some of it still went on. It definitely wasn't as, like, aggressive, I'll say. Like
physical? It was more just...
Yeah, it maybe contracted back to that core group of guys. So yeah, it had kind of gone out into, like, the broader school. When I went back, it was them that would, like, say stuff, spit at me, push me, shove me, like... And I just dealt with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went back.
Did it feel good? Did you feel like you'd won?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I felt proud that I'd done that. I think by that point as well, my sister had moved to that school as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So she was going to a different school, and I think by then she'd moved to my school as well. So, and her and her friend sat was pretty close to like where Holly and the girls sat.
And so she's 2 years older.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of remember being between the two of them. But yeah, got back, did my school certificate. And it definitely died down because, like, I remember then after my school certificate sticking around for year 11, like, I don't think I actually consciously was like, oh, I'm going to drop out.
Yeah.
I still had it in my head, like, I wanted to go to uni.
Mm.
And that was why I'm like, well, I have to get that because then if I don't get that, I can't go to uni. So went back, finished my school certificate, ended up doing, like, here, I don't know whether it's just New South Wales or in Australia. The school year is split into four terms. Year 11 here and year 12 is your final year. Year 11 is three terms.
Mm.
And then year 12 is, I think, three again, but one is in the previous year, if that makes sense. So doing a full calendar year at school in year 11 actually does three terms of year 11 and one term of year 12. So I did that. I did the three terms of year 11, one term of year 12. And really struggled through it, like after missing so much school. Like I did okay in my school certificate, but not that great.
Yeah.
But it was less like graded. It was like you passed or you failed, you know, kind of thing. So I passed that and then really struggled through like year 11 and the term of year 12, like particularly maths and English and like some of those things where I just missed complete sections of maths. Mm. So then it came to... the end of year 12 and like I was just sort of holding it together then decided to I dropped out at that point.
Obviously we've talked about the actual stuff that was going on and the mental stuff. What happened with your health?
I think like I definitely got like I put weight on, I got bigger.
Because you would have kept growing as well.
Yeah, well, like at that point, I think I would have been like 6'1", 6'2", yeah, probably 6'1"-ish.
Mm.
I grew like a last little growth spurt sort of 17, I think, and then I'm 6'5 now. So I grew like another bit sort of between those ages. Mm. Yeah.
And when you finished, what did you do?
Finished school?
Yeah.
I left it on apprenticeship.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so like...
that's right.
By then, like, and this leads into the, like, why I started hanging around with ratbag people. when I was, like, 17-ish, I started to meet some people. I was on, like, a car forum. I started to get into cars.
Good old internet, man.
Yeah, one of my friends so that I'd made, he was the next door neighbor of one of the guys who was my like best mate in primary school. Ended up connecting with him. He got a car, like, he was a year above me, so we started to like go into town, like doing laps in his car. Got involved in this like car forum at the time. Started to meet a bunch of people with like nice hot up cars and stuff like that. Which was like, I remember in that year 11, year 12 kind of phase, like I had this like cool outside of school life, which was different to like, so I was hanging out with like older kids. Like when I was 17, I was hanging out with a bunch of like 20, 30 year olds that were involved in this car scene. So like I remember being like 17 on my L plates, like on weekends starting to go to like drag races and stuff and started to like get involved in the car scene a lot while I was still at school. Which led to the mechanics apprenticeship that I took because this guy that in that scene started up a mechanics business and I knew he wanted an apprentice and he asked me whether I wanted to work there. So that was kind of when I started to branch off from what was going on in school.
That would have been quite an interesting departure, like going from the school experience where you were rescued by a group of like the girls to being in a car scene. That's super interesting. Did you feel like a different person when you
Absolutely, yeah. I could be a different person.
Yeah.
It was, like I said, it felt like this completely different life that I started to live like outside of that, like where I, like people really liked me. I felt popular. Like I was in this group of people that like, you know, we would hang out all the time on weekends and like I had this like social life that was like kind of exploding. Yeah, up on the other side of all that.
That's funny. I remember having that experience when I moved for university because, and I think if you get away from high school and where you grew up, you probably, everybody probably has that experience because, you know, your first time being in a different place around different people where no one knows who the fuck you are. They don't know what street you live on, they don't know your mum's name and they don't have your home phone number. But yeah, I remember having that experience and being like, oh, you can just be kind of a brand new person. And then same thing, everyone's really nice. Like people are cool. You can chat to anyone. There weren't cliques. There weren't the popular kids or the nerdy kids. No one was judged. I mean, I won't say no one was judged. There was still judgment going on and still probably to a degree some cliques, but it wasn't high school. It was very different. And I remember just my younger brother, I've got a brother who's 2 years younger than me, being like, get the fuck out of our home city. Like you have to leave. Because if you don't, you will be trapped in high school mode forever. And I think that's some, like when I see people who've done that, I'm a little bit like,
See, I think I had that, but I stayed in the same city. But it was just because of this completely different scene that existed that was, so I still, I think I had that transition.
Yeah, well,
away from my school identity.
Yeah, I guess it's not the location, it's the people.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like if you.
It's shifting identities and it's changing like from schoolboy to then like like I said, car scene, cool people like doing stuff like that have got other shit going on in their lives. So that was kind of, is there anything else on the school stuff you want to talk about?
No, I think I was going to ask what happened to the nerd girls.
One of them ended up together with the dickhead guys.
The James one?
Yeah. Wait. No. James.
Because I think you remember. I remember you telling me that they all turned out to be obviously, which all good nerd girls do, turned out to be the hot chicks.
Yeah. Some of them, like the main few of them, they were. Yeah. They all turned out to be the hot ones. Like now, like I haven't seen them any of them in years, but there was like so two of the main ones I was probably closest with. One of them ended up with James for a period of time.
Oh, that's wild.
That was like later on. I think that was like probably during that period, like 17, 18. So it was like years later kind of thing. And then Holly ended up with one of the guys who was like not in my friend group, but the broader external group, one of the asshole people out of that, like years later as well. I don't know if they're still together. I think they bought a house, married, things like that.
I would have held a grudge against those guys forever.
Yeah.
I would have been like, no, fuck that guy, he's a douchebag. Yeah. So what about James? Did you ever talk to James again? Did you ever interact?
Yeah.
Did he ever apologize?
Yeah, he did.
Really?
So, yeah.
And what, how, so how does that go down?
So I've...
He's like, sorry for punching you in the face.
He was probably the best out of all of them. So like all of the main ones that were involved, I've approached like later in life.
You've approached?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Probably between, you know, I'll say like 18 and 20 something ish, like early 20s. I either ran into them or found them at different points.
And you've approached them as in a, hey, like, how are you kind of a way, because you've seen them out, or you've approached them in like a, hey, do you remember me? You fucking like beat me up for 18 months in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly like that second one. but so like, I think three of them I saw in the main nightclub in Newcastle that everyone used to go to. So once we all got to kind of clubbing age. So three of them I saw there. I saw James at like another event that was like a mutual friend's. Well, this girl, the one he ended up with, the one I think he's now still married to, or last I saw was still married to, she was in the car scene.
Yeah, okay.
So he ended up turning up to her birthday.
Yeah,
when they first started dating, and I was there, and I pulled him aside there.
What'd you say?
Pretty much to all of them, I kind of said the same thing. I'm like, hey, like, I just want to talk to you about what you did to me. And then sort of said, like, do you realize how serious that was and what, like, what it did to me? I told them about being suicidal and that they nearly killed me, essentially. So I sort of talked to them about that and just sort of said, like, yeah, do you realize? So James, like I said, was probably the best at it. Like, he said to me, he's like, look, he's like, it just got out of hand real quick. He's like, I never thought it would turn into what it did, and it got out of hand. So I think...
Fuck, out of hand.
Like,
Jesus.
Like, he, you know, by then, like, he would have been in his 20s as well, obviously, it looking back at something that happened at 16, you know, going, fuck, like, you know, I don't think he ever planned on it escalating the way it did. Yeah. You know, it just turned into, like I said, a fun game, and, like, he did that, and then other people saw it and decided to kind of stack up the back of him. Mm. So I probably have the most empathy for him in all that. I just don't think that... Yeah, he ever really thought it would that would happen. So, just kind of talked about all that, and all of them have been pretty much the same conversation, and have ended the conversation with all of them with saying thank you to them, saying thank you for making me who I am now.
I mean, that's what I was about to say. I was going to say, if you were one of the guys in the gang, in the cohort, and it was some other dude that James punched in the face because he suspected his girlfriend was hooking up with him. What's the chance that you would have also joined in on the bullying and harassing?
I'd like to think I wouldn't. And I have a feeling I wouldn't have because I'd stood up for people back then as well.
Yeah, okay.
But who knows? Yeah, maybe like, yeah. But I think I've always been kind of caring towards people. Like, and I remember sticking up for people at different points. So yeah, maybe. But yeah, so ultimately kind of thanked him for making me strong and said, because of you, I'm now stronger than you. So yeah, had that conversation with all of them. Some of them it went better than others. Some of them tried to decide that they would be aggressive again to me, and that didn't work out in their favour. By then, I was one of the cool kids that knew everybody in the nightclub we were in. So I had a few ones like that where they thought they would try and be cool again, and they quickly got sorted out by other people. I feel like I've kind of got closure around some of that stuff with all of them. I approached them, like I said, kind of, I felt like the a little bit of like the final power move was saying thank you to all of them and letting them know that I'm stronger and above them.
I would call that winning.
I think so.
All right. That marks the end of part one. Things got a little deeper than we had planned. So we didn't want to be talking all night. We wanted to give you a break. So we'll be back with part two. I'm actually really excited for you to hear more. Greg has a very interesting story. If you like this podcast, and I've never asked this before, it feels kind of strange, but if you like it and you want to rate us on whatever platform you listen to us on, we would really appreciate that. Not even we, fucking I would really appreciate that. It's really cool to see what you guys like and hear that you're actually listening. And yeah, the feedback is really, really valuable. So let us know and we will see you next time.